Shabbos is a special Shabbos. In fact, this Shabbos earns itself its own simon in Shulchan Aruch. Simon Taf Lamed in Shulchan Aruch has a grand total of like 7 words by the Mechaber that says something along the lines of Shabbos Shalvnei Pesach Nikreis Shabbos Hagadol Rav Shulchan Aruch in front of me, but something like that. That it's called the Shabbos Hagadol Lefnei because of the Neis Gadol that happened on that Shabbos. And Mishmur explains what was the Neis Gadol that happened on that Shabbos. The Jewish people took the Korban Pesach and got it ready to slaughter just a few days later. It happened to have been on Yud Nisan that year. Not happened to have been. It needs 4 days of Bikur, of examining the Korban in advance. And even though it was an Egyptian god, the Egyptians wanted to stop them, wanted to kill them, couldn't do anything. Shein of Chaos, the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Lashon, their teeth were Chaos, which what does that mean? Throughout Tanakh and Shas, whenever you have Shein of Chaos, it means that a person was silenced. They couldn't do anything to respond. They wanted to say something, but they were stuck. They were sort of relegated to a non-speaking status or immobilized in some way or another. By the way, that's the Peshat in the Haggadah. Hakei Ashenov by the Rasha is not Hakei as in Chafhei, to be Makeh, to strike or hit. No, it's Kuf. Hey, right? That's how it's spelled in the Haggadah. It means that he's marginalized, that he can't say anything. He's unable to respond. He doesn't get to express a dea at the Seder. We just sort of ignore him and let him, not allow him to be part of it. But anyway, that's beside the point. So as a result of that, we have this special Shabbos before Pesach called Shabbos Haggadah. The what's the nafkamina la'alacha that it's Shabbos Hagadol? Okay, good. You call it the Great Shabbos. So do I have to have like a better Shabbos than I normally have? Like, what does that mean? So the Rama says, oh, so there's a minute that some people read the Haggadah. Other posts can say that maybe when you greet someone on Shabbos Hagadol, you should say instead of Shabbat Shalom, you should say Shabbat Hagadol Shalom. Something like that. But that doesn't seem that there's really, the Gra wasn't even in favor of the minhag to read the Haggadah. Doesn't seem that there's much to it, but we make a big enough deal about it that it's in Shulchan Aruch, that all of the Achronim are bothered, the Balei Halacha as well as the Balei Machshava are all bothered by the obvious Kasha. This was a miracle that happened 4 days in advance of the Shechting of the Korban Pesach. 4 days in advance of the Shechita of the Korban Pesach is Yud Nisan. Whenever we commemorate anything on the Jewish calendar, we always do it based on the calendar date, not based on the day of the week. Why is it that Shabbos Haggadol is based on the day of the week that it occurred rather than on the calendar day? So the Balei Halacha have very interesting ideas that perhaps the Mitzvah knew that the Jewish people were Shomer Shabbos even in Mitzrayim, and when they saw them being metapel with animals and being kosher, tying the animals to the end of the bed, wait, you're not allowed to tie knots on Shabbos? You guys don't deal with animals on Shabbos? And that's what tipped them off, that something was going on, something unusual, and that's how they knew to ask. I think the Levush says like that. Others suggest that Yud Nisan might have been confused for another celebration of maybe the splitting of the Yard Day and other things that may have happened on Yud Nisan. They wanted it very clear what this celebration was about, and therefore they put it on Shabbos. But maybe on Pimach Shabbos there's something deeper about the connection specifically between Shabbos and Pesach, and it takes on extra meaning this year and many years when Shabbos, in fact, coincides with Pesach. So forget about Shabbos Haggadol, Shabbos before Pesach. The actual first day of Pesach is Shabbos. So this is what I'm going to be speaking about Shabbos Haggadol, but we'll give like a synopsis of the Machshava part or the Drush part. Shabbos and Pesach are connected in many obvious ways. For example, both by Shabbos and by Pesach, the notion of Shmira is very important. Right, the notion of Shomer Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho, we have by Shabbos, by Pesach Ushmartem Es HaMatzos. The notion of Shmira, as Chachma points out, comes up by Pesach like a half a dozen times. It's all over both Shabbos and Pesach. You have a notion of Shmira Shabbos and being Shomer the Matzos for Pesach. And in addition to that, the Lashon of Zechira relates very much to both Shabbos and Pesach. Zachar is Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho, and what's the mitzvah that we have throughout the year that relates to the theme of Pesach? Zechiras Yitzias Mitzrayim. Zechartem Asayom Azeh. There's a heavy emphasis on Zechira, both by Shabbos and Pesach, and even more obvious and more blatantly clear to that Shabbos and Pesach are deeply and intricately connected is the very lashon the Torah uses to describe the Omer. What does the Torah say? When does the Omer start? Mimachras HaShabbos. But it's not on Sunday. It's not always on Sunday. It's Mimachras, this year it happens to be. But Mimachras HaShabbos means the day after the first day of Pesach. Why is the first day of Pesach called Shabbos? Apparently there's a real link between Shabbos and Pesach. In fact, it's Dafka by Shabbos and Pesach that we have that women are chayiv in the mitzvah say, we've been discussing in shir, women are chayiv in the mitzvah say of both Shabbos and Pesach based on kol sheyeshno b'shamar, yeshno b'zachar, kol sheyeshno b'bal t'ochal, yeshno b'kum echal. That svar only appears in those two places. By Kiddush on Shabbos, the idea that if you're chayiv in los haseis, you must be chayiv in haseis, it only appears by Kiddush on Shabbos and by Matzah on Pesach. And that's it. So there is something here. There's definitely some significant link between Shabbos and Pesach. The question is, what is that link? So Pashtus, I think, and Rav Yerucham Olshan dedicates, I think, the first seven essays in his Sefer of Ma'amarim on the Yom Tov of Pesach to this idea. The Pashtus is the connection between Shabbos and Pesach is that both of them share the same basic theme. And that theme is Emuna. It's Emuna in different things. Shabbos is about Emuna in Maisa Bereshis, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. Pesach is Emuna in Hashgacha Pratis, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't only create the world, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim and with detail took care of us in order to get us out of Mitzrayim. And in fact, when we express our Emuna b'Hashem, so what's the pasuk that expresses Emuna b'Hashem? Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Tzosicha Meretz Mitzrayim. It incorporates both Hashem Elokecha, so you'd expect Ebenezer HaSakash, you'd expect it to say Asher Baruch Shemayim Va'aretz, but maybe that's already sort of incorporated in Hashem Elokecha. And then Hotzeisicha Meretz Mitzrayim, both. He's God, meaning He created the world, and Hotzeisicha Meretz Mitzrayim, He runs the world, He takes care of us on a daily basis. And maybe, the idea of Emuna is really the primary message we're trying to convey to our children and to people at the Seder. You know, if you read different Haggadahs, I used to give a Haggadah shir every year where I would just collect different vartlach from a number of different Haggadahs. There's no shortage of Haggadahs out there. Many times there's a lot of overlap. They all say the same thing. But, you know, you could collect a little bit here, a little bit there. I put together Haggadah shir every year. And then like 6-7 years ago, I stopped doing that. I started instead focusing on one Haggadah each year, because very often when someone writes a commentary to the Haggadah, they're not just stam saying a vart here and a vart there. If they're really writing a commentary to the Haggadah, they're establishing a theme that runs through the Haggadah. And unless you see how it runs through from beginning to end, you're not really getting the point of that Haggadah. You know, it's like there are two types of Haggadahs that are out there. There are those Haggadahs that are just a collection of divrei Torah that are somewhat loosely associated with Haggadah. You know, like if you find the Haggadah of any recent Gadol, pretty much. You know, Haggadahs from Moshe Feinstein, Haggadahs from Shlomo Zalman Rabbah. Neither of them ever wrote a commentary on the Haggadah. They said divrei Torah all the time. So people took their divrei Torah and connected them to the Haggadah. Okay, so you're not going to find a theme in there, obviously, because they didn't write a commentary to the Haggadah. I have no interest in those Haggadahs. Nice for a Dvar Torah, but that's not really about the Haggadah. Then there are those Haggadahs that were actually written by great people as a commentary to the Haggadah. The Haggadah of the Malbim, the Haggadah of the Nesivos, the Haggadah of Rishonim as well, that they actually wrote a commentary to the Haggadah. Those, to me, are much more interesting. And when you read those kinds of Haggadahs, you see a theme that develops through the Haggadah. The most obvious theme that develops through the Haggadah is the relationship Klal Yisrael has with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is that we have Emunah B'Hashem, which an offshoot of our Emunah B'Hashem is that Hashem loves us, Hashem takes care of us, and we are expressing HaKaras HaTov for all that love and care and concern. And you'll find, so some Haggadahs will more emphasize that Paras HaTov element. Others will emphasize the Amunah element. Others will emphasize the Hashem loving us element. But it all boils down really to Amunah. Meaning all of that is about Emunah. Emunah means that we trust in Hashem, we know that we can trust in Hashem because we believe absolutely in Hashem. And maybe that's why the way the story is told is dafka, maschil b'gnos u'masayim b'shavach. What does it mean to be maschil b'gnos u'masayim b'shavach? We tell the story and we incorporate in the story all the bad things that happened. We don't just say, oh, Hashem has been great. We incorporate all the bad things that happen because it's easy to be a Baal Emunah when everything's great. What we're trying to teach people, teach ourselves, teach our children, teach people around the Seder table is that to be a Baal Emunah means to appreciate everything, to appreciate the big picture. That even when there is Gnus, it's only because somehow it's leading up to Shevach. And we may be in moments in life where there's more Gnus than Shevach, but nevertheless, we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is behind everything. And that's why maybe the style of how we do Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is Derech She'ela U'tshuva. Because if one has no kashas in life, if there are no difficulties, no questions, no challenges, there's nothing you don't understand, well then it's not really a breeding ground for emunah. Then emunah is obvious. To really strengthen one's emunah, there needs to be kashas. And then you discover that ultimately there are terutzim to those kashas. Sometimes we discover those terutzim, sometimes we don't. But a person who has kashas and can still connect to the Ribono Shel Olam, that's what emunah is really all about. That's the exercise of building emunah. The maschil b'gnus is just as important as the mesayim b'shevach. The she'elos are just as important as the tshuvas. I tell people often, if they have young children, and often the kids come home with all sorts of divrei Torah on the Haggadah, and like they dominate the whole Seder with every ridiculous gematria and karpas or something, with 15 pshatim and halach ma'anya. It's not even part of the mitzvah. The mitzvah is like later on, but by then everyone's tired and just rushing through the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, because by then we've already hit way past everyone's attention span. So what do you do? How do you control that? So one approach might be to tell the children, you only ask the kashas, you don't give the answers. It's a big chiddush. There's no mitzvah v'igad to lavicha. There's a mitzvah v'igad to lavincha. And the way it is, it's supposed to be derech she'ela tshuva. Children are supposed to ask the questions, and the adults are supposed to do their best to give answers, to tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is the story of Amunah. But I think this point, that we, how do we build children's Amunah? Not just by saying, oh, everything's always great for the Jewish people. The Jewish people, it's fantastic. No, we sit them down and we say, there are people that hated us, that wanted to kill us. Bechol Dover Dar, there are people that hate us, that want to kill us. Life is not always so peachy. It's not always so great. And through that, we build the Amunah. And it's an important Musr, because if a person is going to be a Baal Emunah, they can't be so weak. You can't be so pampered. You can't just expect everything to be easy. Rav Moshe Weinberger describes how he was once talking to a student, a young lady who had major, she was very upset at God. And, he said, what's the matter? Last week, my grandfather died, and I davened my heart out. And if Hashem is not going to listen to my tefillos, how could I daven to Hashem anymore? Oh my gosh, how old was your grandfather? 94. Really? I mean, maybe Hakaras HaTov that the Ribono Shel Olam gave him 94 years on this earth. Of course, at a Shas Evel, we should be sad, but not with kashas on the Ribono Shel Olam, because a man died at the age of 90. Meaning, when people's emuna is so flimsy, it's like we assume that everything will just happen the way we want it to happen, because that's what life is supposed to be. Life is supposed to be everything on a silver platter. Well, then a person is not going to be able to have a proper sense of emuna. The Gemara Maseches Brachos tells us, the Mishnah tells us in Brachos that Shem Shem Varchan El Tov, Kachem Varchan El Ra'ah. That just like you say Bracha on good, you say Bracha on bad. So the Gemara asks Nakasha, Kishem, just like? It's not just like. On Tov, you say Atov Ametiv. On Ra'ah, what do you say? Dynamis. So what do you mean Kishem? It's not the same Bracha. So the Gemara says, no. Kishem means that you're Mekabel both Besimcha. Besimcha. What does it mean you're Mekabel both Besimcha? that I understand, I'm a couple good things besimcha. Someone dies and I say, die in the emes, it should be besimcha? What does that mean, besimcha? So Meir Tversky Shlita explained, no, besimcha does not mean that you're jumping for joy and you have balloons and whatever and you're throwing a party. No, besimcha means, I don't know why balloons are a happy thing, it's just, I don't know, I guess a convention. But besimcha means that you understand that everything in this world is exactly the way it's supposed to be. That the Ribbono Shel Olam is running things, and if someone died, it's because the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted it to be that way. That is the definite, it's the, Rav Tversky said, the serenity that comes with the knowledge that everything is as it ought to be. You know, they'd say of a fellow, I think, that met the Chafetz Chaim once, and the Chafetz Chaim knew him from before, and he said, how's everything going? And a very classic Jewish response. What did he say? Could be better. Could be better. So Chafetz Chaim said, no, if it could be better, it would be better. Meaning, the Ribbono Shel Olam does what the best it could. You know, the best it could be is what the Ribbono Shel Olam. So if it could be better, it absolutely would be better. A person who's a Baal Emunah can survive through difficult times. A person goes through a hard time. I was just reading some of the memories that people had of Rav Ozer Glickman, Zichrono Livracha, who just suddenly passed away this week. Is one of the Rosh Yeshiva in YU, a very outside the box kind of a Rosh Yeshiva. I don't know if anyone knows him at all and knows anything about him. He was a very successful person in the world of finance. He was a high executive at CIBC, at a major bank, and was a significant Talmud Chacham as well. And at some point, when he was like 50. Decided to become a Rosh Yeshiva and, you know, was taught in YU for many years in smicha classes, in the IBC program, in the law school, in like all different divisions. And someone described, one of the things I saw, someone described how just a few weeks ago he was suffering from the flu. He ultimately did not, I don't think that's what he died of. I think he had recuperated from it. But he was suffering from the flu, and it got really bad. It got to the point where he had trouble breathing, and it got really bad. And he sent a text to a number of his friends who are suffering long-term illnesses, saying that as he was struggling with his illness, all he could do is think about those who struggle with illness on a more long-term basis. You know, those who are dealing with illness on a more long-term basis than he is, and that his thoughts are with them, and that he now appreciates so much more their suffering. And that really struck me. Of all the different memories and things that people shared about him, that one really struck me. Because here's a person who's suffering yisurin, you know? So some of that, how you doing? Ah, I'm not feeling so good. But it's not about me. It's not, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me these yisurin, maybe it's so that I can understand a little bit better somebody else's issue, and I could relate a little bit more when someone else is struggling through something. I mean, many of you know, I had surgery a couple of months ago. When I was recuperating from my surgery, I had that same thought. Of course, I didn't have the sensitivity or wisdom to actually express that thought to anybody who is actually suffering from anything. But the same, at least I got that to that, you know, that point, that the thought went through my head that at least now when someone goes through surgery, I'll understand a little bit more, you know, what they're going through, what they're talking about. That's what Yisurin are for. They're to be able to turn them into a stronger Jew. Without Emunah, if a person does not have Emunah, he will always be a slave. You'll be a slave to Paro. If you're not a slave to Paro, you'll be a slave to your job. If you're not a slave to your job, you'll be a slave to your typhus. Without a proper sense of Emunah, a person is always a slave. The definition of a Ben Chorin is a Baal Emunah. Rav Kook writes about this, that the definition of a Ben Chorin, the definition of freedom, is a Baal Emunah. Rav Moshe Weinberger often talks about the guy who celebrates a whole festival of freedom, and he enjoys the whole celebration of Pesach, where he's a Ben Chorin, and then what does he do right after Pesach is over? He's standing in line for 2 hours in a pizza shop. But is there a bigger eved than that? A person who's such an eved to his taivis that he's got to be standing in line. You know, he's texting all his friends, I can't believe this pizza's not ready. No, no, no. You know, that's avdus. That's not cheirus. Cheirus means that a person is a Baal Emunah. A person is living on a higher level where they're not an eved to anything. So yeah, we want, of course, we always want that our children should be happy. But the way to make them happy in the long run, the way to achieve simcha, is not by pampering them, not by telling them that everything's going to be fine and that you'll never have to face adversity and there's never, not going to be any challenges. No, we build their happiness and our own happiness by talking about gnos, by talking about b'chol dar v'dar omdim aleinu l'chaloseinu, by talking about all of these things that there are shilos, some that don't have obvious tshuvos, and through that we build a sense of emunah, and we do it with a sense of love, a love for each other, and a love ultimately for the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that really is the connection between Shabbos and Pesach. And that's a unique opportunity we have this year, where not only do we have a Shabbos HaGadol, where Shabbos, which represents Emunah, is what primes us for Pesach, not only is Shabbos HaGadol, but Pesach itself is Shabbos, where each one enhances the other. The Emunah B'Brias HaOlam, the Emunah B'Hashkachas Hashem, that it all comes together. And something maybe sometimes we don't talk about enough, about how critical we talk about mitzvos and behavior and what to do, but Judaism is at its core, it's a system of beliefs. Those beliefs absolutely demand many, many behaviors, but it's at its core, it's a system of beliefs, and the foundation of all of that is emunah. And people often think, you know, oh, emunah, yeah, I believe. Yeah, I believe in emunah. Is not just I believe. You know, there are multiple madrigos of emunah. There are many, many different madrigos, and it's something that we could always be working on. What's the maisa they tell with the Berditchover, I think, that Reb Levi Yitzchak, when he married, his father-in-law was a misnaged. No, and he went to the Magid of Mezrich. Does anyone know this maisa? I think he went to the Magid of Mezrich for a while, and he came back to his father-in-law. His father-in-law said, "What did you have to go? What did you learn by the Magid already that you didn't know already?" So he said, "Well, I learned that there is a God." And his father-in-law said, calls in the Shivcha, and he says, Maria, I don't know, probably their Shivchas weren't named Maria, but he said, is there a God? And Maria says, yeah, there's a God. So he says, the Shivcha knows there's a God. You have to go all the way to the Magid of Mezrich to learn that there's a God. So no, she knows that she believes that there's a God. I know that there's a God. Meaning that there are different madrigos in Emunah. There's a different reality of Emunah. And that's what Pesach is about. That's what Shabbos is about, is building up that true sense of Emunah, which reflects itself in an ongoing relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam.